The R10 15 Avenue Ride will call the House Tax Committee to order. When we have a quorum, members, we have a full agenda today. It'd be my intention to work on all the bills on the agenda this morning if we get to them. We do not physically have House File 5 before us. It's going to take four actions. It's going to take an act of Congress to get it to us. But we'll have it by 5, or an act of the House, I should say. We'll have it by 5. So if we go through the bills that we have on the agenda here and we have time to take testimony on House File 5, we'll do that, but we cannot act on it. And I understand there's a Schultz amendment that will be presented at that time also. So with that, we're very fortunate to have a former member of this committee before us. But I will move when we have a quorum, House File 460. So members, we take 460 out and kind of just hang on to them because we're not going to be acting on them. Is the A2 amendment yours, Representative Swazinski?
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe that is my amendment.
Ms. Dalton, is that his amendment? Does he like that?
Mr. Chair, yes, it is.
Okay, he likes that. Okay, so when we get to actual process, we will put that on for if it has enough votes. It could be close. It may be over for you, Representative Swazinski. But with that, if you could please present House File 460. I guess before we get going with that, I don't have any testifiers on this one. I do on the next Swazinski bill. Anyone in the audience wish to testify on behalf of this? Anyone with concerns? You know what that means, Representative Swazinski? The gentleman from Lyon. Okay, now, normally, members, as you know, we always invite the department to testify on each bill. Mr. Cummings is very busy, and he's throughout the campus here this morning, but I have told him that he can, when he gets here, he can testify on all the transportation bills in total, or if he wants to take them specifically, he can do whatever he would like in that regard when he gets here. But he's working on a very important piece of legislation in public safety right now, the Zapper bill. Okay, so to your bill, Chair Swazinski.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to come before you and talk about House File 460. This bill is pretty straightforward. It takes the 9.2% tax collected on short-term motor vehicle leases, essential rental cars, and then also the sales tax, and focuses that into the Corridors of Commerce program. That's what the bill does, and I'd appreciate your support.
Okay, any questions for members? Anyone from the audience like to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Okay, this one we are going to put aside for now, and since we don't have a quorum quite yet, but we'll act on them as soon as we do. Okay, I will move House File 479 when we have a quorum. On this one, I have an Ann Finn and a Mark Maloney. Is there anyone else from the audience which testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns? And again, members, just for those of you arriving here, the department is in another meeting now. When they come here, we will have a time for them to testify on any or all bills regarding transportation that they'd like to. And Commissioner Bowerly, just so you know, is going to be testifying on House File 5, so you want to put her name down on that. Okay. So that being said, two-year bill, Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you again here with House File 479. It really just focuses the bill primarily on the exemption of motor vehicle sales tax. Currently, township purchases of road maintenance vehicles, dump trucks, other vehicles used in the manner to fix our roads and our infrastructure are exempt. And we're simply extending this exemption to cities and counties so that they're in correlation in the same manner as townships. I have a couple of folks here to talk about it from some organizations that represent our fine cities and counties. So thank you.
Okay, let's start Ms. Ann Finn, please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Ann Finn, and I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. I know you're used to seeing Gary Carlson in front of this committee, and I'll do my best to channel him today. I work on transportation issues.
You're here.
Mary. Mr. Chair, I'll let him know. I'm going to actually just turn it over to our other testifier, Mr. Mark Maloney, but I wanted to make sure that you know that the League has initiated this bill. We appreciate Representative Swazinski's work on it, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Okay. Please state your name for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Mark Maloney. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Shoreview, Minnesota, and I'm here on behalf of one organization, which I believe that you have a handout from the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. I'm also a past president of the American Public Works Association Minnesota chapter, which boasts 1,000 members statewide. And these are the people that are in the position of delivering local government services in the area of street maintenance and snow plowing. And they are very much in support of this proposed legislation. This would, in a very practical sense, free up resources at local government level to do some very basic core services, things that you know and appreciate, like pothole patching and crack filling. These sorts of dollars, which are now currently not available to us because of the motor vehicle excise tax or sales tax, are dollars that we could put back into preventative maintenance measures in our street system. And any preventative maintenance measures that we're able to do on a street system save taxpayers a significant amount of money in the future. So we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Questions for members for Ms. Finn or Mr. Maloney? Okay, with that, why don't you just hold on here, Chair Swedzinski, for a bit. And again, members, for those of you that just come in, the department is going to be able to testify when they get here. They're in another committee right now. So, that being said, we have a quorum. We'll officially call the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of March 2nd, 2017. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, item next, the bill that is before us right now is House File 479. Anyone else in the audience wish to testify on behalf of or with concerns? And again, we'll be hearing from the department in a bit. So if the department testimony triggers some more member questions, that's fine. We will take them at that time. I see no amendments on this one, so I'll renew my motion that House File 479 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Okay, item next, I will move that House File 460 be before us. I will move the H046082 amendment. Any discussion? That is an author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. I now will move House File 460 as the amendment be laid for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Oh, just laying it over. Oh, laying it over. For the record, we're laying these babies over. Okay, so with that, thank you, Chair Swedzinski. Laid over for possible inclusion, for the record. Okay, item next, Representative Look. Is in another committee, so we will go to Representative Howe. Is Representative Howe with us? Representative Kosnick's on the committee, so you can wait. Representative Green is here. House File 963, Transportation Department Purchase Exemption Provided for Road Construction Projects. So members, I will move House File 963. And let's see here, 963. I see no amendments at this time. So I'll move House File 963. Is there anyone who wishes to testify on behalf of the bill before we get going? Anyone with concerns? And members, most members on this committee have seen these ideas before. But we will certainly take testimony. A two-year bill, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. It's a pretty simple bill. We are making the Department of Transportation pay for sales tax on what they buy. Basically, what it's doing is just simply taking dollars that are dedicated for our roads and bridges and flipping them back into the general fund. And at a time when we're looking for even spending general fund to try to make up a difference in deficiencies in transportation, I just don't think it's wise. And so this bill corrects it.
Thank you. Questions for members? And again, the department will have the opportunity to visit all these things. The members can ask questions if the department spurs some questions. Remember, so that I will move that House File 963 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We will go with Representative Kosnick to your bill. Representative Kosnick moves House File 901. So members, if we could please take out House File 901. Representative Kosnick moves House File 901. Is that your amendment, the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Kosnick moves the H0901 A1 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now we have 901 as amended. Okay, two-year bill. First of all, is there anyone in the audience who can testify on behalf of the bill? I have no one signed up to testify. That doesn't mean you can't. Okay, so we have a gentleman that will be coming down. Anyone with concerns? Or okay, two-year bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill is the motor vehicle lease sales tax allocation. In 2008, the motor vehicle lease tax was established as part of a transportation deal of that year, and the revenues generated from the motor vehicle lease tax are split evenly between the metro collar counties and Greater Minnesota Transit. And what this bill does is also, in 2008, the first $32 million was exempted from that distribution formula and retained in the general fund. What this bill does is add the tax generated, the first $32 million, into the transportation systems of the Metro Collar Counties, County State Aid Highways, and the Greater Minnesota Transit Programs.
Thank you. Let's take some testimony, then we'll go to member questions, if there's member questions. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Steve Novak. I represent the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is essentially four of the five suburban counties in Minnesota and 10 of the largest Greater Minnesota counties. I'm here this morning to strongly support Representative Kosnick and House Bill 901. Our organization was part of the negotiations that occurred back in 2008, the one and only time in the last 29 years when a major transportation funding bill is passed. The provision in this bill was part of that negotiation, and we believe the time is right now to continue this split from dollar one instead of starting at $33 million since the state has been in the black now for several years. So we strongly support the bill.
Questions for the witness? Anyone else wish? Yes, Representative Anderson S. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Novak. Where does the $32 million currently go?
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. Back in 2008, the state of Minnesota was broke, as it had been most of that decade. So the deal that was struck to make up for the loss of a one-quarter cent sales tax that was going to provide money for suburban roads and bridges was to replace that with the sales tax revenue from leased vehicles after the first $32 million. So the question, or the answer to your question is, the first $32 million has always stayed in the state general fund. And the logic behind it at the time was that the state was in deficit. They needed extra money to solve the political issue and the negotiation at the time. But the preeminent issue of that day was to try to get the state from the red to the black, and so the first $32 million has always stayed in the state general fund.
Chair Anderson S.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Novak, so how in this bill and how it was set up originally, it's always excluded Hennepin County from it, and what was the logic behind that?
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. Basically, how that came about was that in 2007 and most of 2008, the bill was structured in such a way so that there was two separate one-quarter cent sales taxes in the bill. The first quarter cent sales tax was to create the organization we now know as CTIB and to become the funding agent essentially for rail across the metropolitan area. The presumption at that time, which history has largely proven to be factual, is that the vast majority of those CTIP dollars would be spent in Minneapolis, Hennepin County, and St. Paul, Ramsey County. So as a result of that, there was a second quarter cent sales tax that was in the package for suburban road and bridge. And you may recall the history of that time that Governor Pawlenty, deep into the 2008 session, publicly said that if this package passed, he was going to veto it. There were, I forget the precise number, Mr. Chairman, 7 or 8 Republican legislators at the time who had gone public and said that they would override the veto. They came under a lot of pressure. They went to the then Speaker of the House and basically said, you've got to lighten the load on the tax side of this. The decision that was made was to eliminate the second quarter cent sales tax, which was the money for suburban roads and bridges. That led to a revolt from legislators of both parties in the suburban counties and a request of the then Speaker of the House to find a solution to this problem, but they were no longer going to be able to support the bill. And we all know how difficult it's been to pass one of these. There's only been one passed in 29 years. And the contention was is that if the problem wasn't solved, that one wouldn't have passed either. So the solution was to take the proceeds from the sales tax on leased vehicles after the first $32 million and to split the overage 50-50 between the 5 suburban counties for roads and bridges and Greater Minnesota Transit. That was the deal. That became the law. It happened to coincide with the Great Recession of 2008, 9, and 10. So for the first 3 years that this was in effect, there was no money to split because the tax didn't bring in over $32 million, all of which stayed at the state. Starting in 2011 and 2012, the economy came back. Automobiles sort of led the way. So now we had more money than $32 million coming in. The law worked. The money started to split 50-50, and the money continued to grow and has continued to grow since then. And that's how we've gotten to this position today. So the argument behind Representative Posnick's bill is the only reason that that split didn't start at the first dollar back in 2008 was because the state was broke. The argument now is the state's been in the black for 3-4 years. Future looks good. The deal should be completed and the split should start at the first dollar.
Chair Anderson asks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Novak. And when you highlighted that Hennepin County was excluded because the CTIB structure and that the bulk of the money, you had mentioned that the bulk of the money was spent in Minneapolis, and I would agree with you, the bulk of the money has been spent in Minneapolis. But myself and Representative Loon and Representative Hertas were all part of Hennepin County, and our communities haven't seen those funds. So I've had this conversation with Representative Kosnick and how we can address all suburban districts' needs when it comes to road and bridge projects, and look forward to having a continuing conversation on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Anderson Essen. Thank you, Mr. Novak. Questions for the witness at this point? Okay. You want to wrap it up there, Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Excuse me. There is a question. Vice Chair McDonald.
Of course. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the author. Just in regards to the lease, is this just leased vehicles? Is it the rental, car rental vehicles, leased vehicles? Could you just explain to me for that?
Representative Kosnick.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair McDonald, this is for lease, long-term lease vehicles, different from the previous bill with short-term rentals.
Vice Chair McDonald.
That is all. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, author.
Any other discussion? I'm going to wrap her up there. Representative Kosnick.
Yep. Thank you to Mr. Chair and thank you to the committee. This is an important bill for our suburban communities to provide additional transportation dollars. That's has been part of the House transportation plan the last couple years, and it's important to well over a million constituents that want a better road transportation system. So I appreciate your consideration.
Representative Kosnick moves that House File 901 be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill as amended.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Thank you, Mr. Novak, for the testimony. Representative Howell. Welcome to committee, sir. I will move House File 638. Is the A1 amendment here, sir?
Yes.
Okay. So I will move the H0. I will move the House File 638. I'll move the H0638A1 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. But first of all, before we get going, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns thereof? Okay. I hope you know what that means in this committee.
I assume that
Jimmy Johns.
That, all right.
Okay.
Super.
Okay. Two. Oh, welcome back. Good to see you. Any pictures?
Bunch.
Okay.
I'm going to Target tonight, assuming our committees don't run too late.
And that's up to you.
I'll get some printed out and bring them back.
That would be wonderful.
Give them to everyone. I turned into the paparazzi, Mr. Chair.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, so we have House File 638 as amended. To your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think most of the folks are pretty knowledgeable on the bill. What this bill does is it takes the already collected tax, sales taxes on automotive parts and dedicates them to roads and bridges. So the initial bill is for $300 million, and then it does an estimation after that. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair, and I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, questions for members? With that, I will renew my motion that House File 638 as amended be delivered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you so much, Representative Howell. Item next, I will move for Representative Lewick. Welcome to the committee, sir. I will move House File 502. I see no amendments at this time. We have no rules, of course, so if members have amendments, we can work on those. So I'll move House File 502. Is there anyone wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Or with concerns, I have a Mr. Ken Suleman and Mr. Bentley Graves. Anyone else from the audience? And again, members, some of you are just coming in here. The department will have all the time that they need when they get here. But as you know, deadline week, people are eight places at the same time. So, to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my bill is very similar to the one you just heard moments ago. The only major difference is it would phase in that moving of the sales tax we already collect over a three-year period, and I believe there's a revenue note that outlines that was made available this morning. $83 million the first year, $174 million the second, and then close to $300 million in the third. So other than a phase-in as opposed to a one-time thing, really no difference between my bill and Representative Howell's bill. I would have testified for Representative Howell's bill, but you're short on time, Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sullivan of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I probably could have testified on 638 as well, but Representative Lewick had reached out to me, so we said 502. We are, as an association, supportive of getting additional revenues into the Highway Unit Trust Fund. As you know, townships are responsible for 56,000 miles of road, plus additional miles that don't qualify for gas tax, running your Highway Unit Distribution Fund checks that come out. Now, why did I say gas tax? Well, because that was the original formula that got into the Highway Unit Trust Fund, and that's where we get our 5% set aside. Knowing that that's not the option most people are looking for this year, we're looking working with the members for the alternative sources to get into that trust fund. So it is dedicated, it comes to the roads and bridges, and it gets out to the rural areas. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Sewell? Mr. Graves? Thank you, Mr. Sewell. Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I, too, could have offered the same comments for Representative Howell's bill, but I'm here to support House File 502 and appreciate Representative Luke bringing it forward. We at the Chamber think that this is a good way to look at bringing additional resources into the transportation system. 34 states use their general fund in some way, shape, or form to support their state roads and bridges. Minnesota does not. There's been some concern about just kind of a blank check from the general fund to transportation, and so we think this approach, taking those resources that are already generated from transportation related sources and using those instead to support the system and broaden the base of financial support for it makes a lot of sense. So thank you for the opportunity to offer these comments this morning.
Questions to the gentleman from the chamber, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Graves. I know the chamber speaks up on a lot of different needs across the state and in a variety of different committees. And this bill in the second biennium would take $550 million out of the state general fund that might be allocated to education, higher ed, job and employment support, other key priorities, and I'm wondering if the chamber has some recommendations on what areas currently supported by the general fund should be scaled back if this is diverted into transportation.
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at the time when we have a $1.65 billion budget, we think there are sufficient resources to look at this as a priority for the state budget.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know that Mr. Graves is aware of this, but the public watching may not, that the quote surplus is based on a budget that inputs inflation on the revenue side but not on the expenditure side. And when you look at what our Minnesota Management and Budget Office has said would be the appropriate measure of inflation and the services that we provide, we have to pay for increased costs of utilities, for health care costs for the people for whom we're in charge of health care. We can't control the prescription drug prices, unfortunately. When you look at that, the surplus is pretty much gone. And so it isn't like there's a part sitting there. And so we're still going to have to prioritize what committees, what other investments would have less, and we'd welcome your input.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Questions for members? Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Chair, some of us were at the meeting yesterday where we talked about the probability in the future and the trend for the pessimistic side. When they're dealing with the projections, they give you the baseline, they give you the optimistic projection, and then the pessimistic. And the pessimistic, through the Council of Economic Advisors, has grown. So that's something to keep in mind as we build this budget. And the other thing is that this is the longest period of prosperity in history, and the second year of the biennium, they're talking about the high probability of two of those quarters having us in a recession. So when we talk about how much is available, one of the big questions is how much should we put in a reserve and in what way we should approach these tax bills in terms of protecting the state's future. I don't think we want to go on a 10-year roller coaster like we did for 1998 or 1999. But that was testimony, and I think you were there, Mr. Chairman, when we were talking about those very issues yesterday in Ways and Means.
Your comments are well taken, Chair Carlson. Other questions for the author on House File 502? Any other testimony from the audience? And again, the department will have time. We will give them time to testify on any bills they'd like. So that I will renew my motion that House File 502 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Item next. Thank you. Item next, I will move House File 5 when we have it before the committee. We do not have it before the committee at this time. It was heard, well, it's been heard, I think, every committee in the legislature, plus in the Senate. So this is one where you kind of take the tour of the legislature, and it's always an exciting trip. With that being said, members, we're going to visit about this. We're going to take some testimony. We don't physically have the bill. It was in Health and Human Services Finance last night, had a very thorough hearing. And so with the floor action today, it will be sent to us, but we physically don't have it. So I'm not one that likes to call the committee in for evening meetings, so I do apologize for that, but I guess this is an exception that I have to make. Hopefully we can get most of the testimony done by noon. And so, and Commissioner Bowerly wants to testify on this one also, so that might be some testimony for tonight. But hopefully we can get most of the testimony done today during committee. Briefly call you in at 5 o'clock. Move the bill if we have the votes. If it goes down, it goes down. And I have the next 3 weeks off, pretty much. So with that being said, we have the bill before us. I'm not going to move because we don't have it before us, but we're going to talk about it anyways. So, members, in your packet, you have the bill, and there is an A2 amendment. Didn't we do that last night?
because this is the very, that's where it's good to have a healthy human service person.
And
Jim's
going to.
Did we go through all the bill?
Okay. Okay, members, this is, I guess, mechanically, physically how we have to take care of this. So, actually, the bill that will come over at 5 o'clock tonight has the A2 amendment on. We have another amendment. What's the A9 amendment? Oh, Mr. Michael, what are we doing here?
Mr. Chairman, the A9 amendment clarifies that the deposit of the 1% tax on nonprofit health service corporations and HMOs takes effect fiscal 18, not the day following final enactment.
Okay. Thank you. And so when we get the bill tonight, 5 o'clock, it'll be House File 5 with the A2 amendment on. We will need to add the A9 amendment. I believe there are other amendments coming. I believe, Representative Schultz, you have an amendment that you had last night that we'll be talking about. Are there any other members? I don't want to skip over any amendments or miss anything here. So any other amendments that you're aware of? And again, we don't have rules, so we're not doing the, has to be in 24 hours beforehand or anything like that. So we'll have a discussion. We don't have the amendment at all, because we might have time to discuss that this morning, or we're getting it printed. Okay, so we'll make sure we have that before we talk about it. Okay, so with that, if we could go to House File 5, and Mr. Michael, could you inform members of the provisions that we're actually talking about? It's not my intention to go in the history of healthcare in the world or things like that. I want to know what this committee's purview is on this bill. Mr. Mike.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are four sections of the bill that have some kind of tax relationship. Sections 9 and 10 change the where the portions of the insurance premium tax go, and then sections 15 and 16 reference the changes made by those two sections. Yeah, so section 9 changes the deposit of the HMO and nonprofit health service plan 1% premium tax from the health care access fund to this new premium security plan account. And then Section 10 takes the first $70 million of the general insurance premiums tax from the general fund and puts it into that premium security plan account that will help fund the reinsurance.
Okay, so members, it's my intention, and for people who wish to testify, it would be on Sections 9 and 10. 15 and 16, we're not going to solve the whole health care issue this time, but members, House File 5 is known as the reinsurance bill. Senate File 1 was passed earlier this year with bipartisan support that got us part of the way there. It had the premium buy-down, about $300 million. It had continuation of care. It had three or four reforms in it. This reform we agreed not to put in that bill because this is kind of a complicated deal that we need to have more committee time spent on, and we agreed to that because it made a lot of sense to give this the once over or twice over. So we'll be discussing sections 9 and 10, 15 and 16. This is, I think, an integral piece of securing the market for 2018. If you've listened to testimony from the Commerce Department, from Commissioner Rothman, Assistant Commissioner O'Connor, and others, you will feel their sense of urgency that something needs to be done by the end of this month, March 31st or April 1st, so that as the carriers start filing their rates, they will know where they're at. And I think this is a very important piece to make sure that we have a market in 2018. When you visit with Commissioner Rothman, you will see what he went through. You will talk about things that he went through in the past year to cobble together, I guess is the best way to say it, some plans for 2017. Many areas of the state have zero all-access plans available, so it's my intention here not to rehash the past or how we got here. It's my intention to look forward and how do we try in working with the governor's office, the department, the Senate, both sides of the aisle. This is something, like I said last night, if we're going to use the words Republican, we're not going to get this done. If we're going to use the word Democrat, we're not going to get this done. If we use the word Minnesotans, we have a chance. We have a chance, and we have to put this together. Governor Dayton understands that. Commissioner Rothman has been through the mill on this thing, so we're trying to work together. Now, there are some various ideas. There's a bill being heard, I think, tomorrow in Commerce, a Halverson bill that has some different ideas on how this bill works, and then we'll get into the tax section. But just overall, so we know how the bill works, it sets up a reinsurance fund. It uses the current MSHA board to oversee this. It has a $50,000 attachment point on the low end. That's the lowest it can go. It could be higher if the board says it could be higher. We have a $250,000 high end, which could be lower if the board decides. And between the numbers that the MSHA board picks, it'll go between 50 and 70% coinsurance. So that's the mechanism to take some pressure off the carriers, hopefully to get more companies in, get some competition. And the intention, of course, is the lower rates, because this is about $400 million, probably a little over $400 million over the next 2 years. This is not the be-all, end-all. This does not save the planet as we know it. But it's something that needs to be done for the carriers to enter the market in 2018 and to try to build back together, Republicans and Democrats working together, to get a market out there so Minnesotans actually have some choices as to what they want to do with their health care. So we have some folks that I'll have testify. Then it'll be fully open to members' questions. And I did say I talked to the commissioner last night. I talked to a whole bunch of folks last night after our meeting. What, Representative Loffler, what did you get, about nine? A little before nine last night, something like that. And Representative Schultz had asked me to talk to Peter Nelson. He had called in, but I was talking to the commissioner and a whole bunch of other folks. And so I texted him back. I said, well, let's talk tomorrow. So we will have that conversation with him. And he was wanted to talk about the Schultz Amendment on an alternative idea for funding. The Halverson bill uses some, department has we've talked about some presumptive condition ideas where you would have a reinsurance plan, but on like six presumptive conditions, you would go to $1. And so this is, we're going to talk tax provisions today, and if I would quit talking about everything but tax provisions, we could talk about tax provisions. But I just wanted to give a little groundwork as to where we're at on this. By no means do I say this is the ultimate solution, but we do need to get this thing to conference committee so we can work with the Department of Commerce and other interested parties to make something work here. And we are on quite a timeline to get this done at the urging of the Department of Commerce and the Governor's office. So, and we'll hear more from Commissioner Bowerly at 5 o'clock. Okay, so with that being said, I have Bentley Graves, Lars Nickstead, Jim Groats, Chris Conry, and two sections, 9 and 10, 15, 16, if you join us, Mr. Bentley. And is there anyone else in the audience which testify on behalf of the bill? I see a Mr. Phil Griffin, Catherine Commit. Anyone else with concern? Yeah, Lead Marquardt.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I am not on the Health and Human Service Committee. And so, just looking at the revenue estimate, if I'm just correct here, if I'm looking at kind of these numbers, if we could, maybe even before the testifiers, it would help put us in a better frame as kind of just how this works. Would that be okay, Mr. Chair?
Absolutely.
We're talking
about tax provisions, right, which are the numbers.
Exactly. And that's all I really care about.
Do
we
need
fiscal
staff or someone to kind of go through the numbers? Ms. Templin, could you join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea, Lead Marquardt.
Just before we start with the testifiers, and I think, if I'm looking at the revenue estimate, that HMO premium tax would be transferred out of a health care access fund, as would the transfer. Okay, then the next one. So the $70 million and $70 million, is that out of general fund or is that also out of the health care access fund? It'd be the third where it says other insurance taxes. And it says $70 million and $70 million, I think. And so maybe that's...
Yeah, let's
so we could ask
Templin,
that. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Marquardt, we'll go there. Okay, Ms. Templin, to the Marquardt question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Marquardt, yes, to your question. Just to review the revenue estimate, starting at the bottom, I think where it says general fund total, you can see there is $70 million each year that the bill kind of earmarks or sets aside from the insurance gross premiums tax. And it is a flat amount that is specified in the bill. And that amount would be reduced from the general fund, and it would go into the premium account, which is an account in the special revenue fund. And you see that at the top of the kind of number total in the special revenue total, the $70 million every year. And then in addition to that, the premium account and the special revenue fund also consists of the 1% HMO premiums tax. And that that currently is in the healthcare access fund, and it would be it would go into this new account in the special revenue fund. And you can see the amount from that fund is projected at $80.6 million in fiscal 18 and goes up to $89.4 million in fiscal 21. So the account, just to review, has the insurance tax, it has the HMO premiums tax, and then in addition to that, there is a $80 million transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund that would be one time only in the fiscal 18-19 biennium. And you can see the sum of that transfer, again, is $80 million, $50 million in fiscal 18 and $30 million in fiscal 19. So the total amount in the account, for the premium account in the special revenue fund, is at its highest in fiscal 18 at $200.6 million.
Mr. Chair,
Marquardt.
Thank you very much. That does really clarify it. And so one more quick question. So you've got this special revenue account, whatever, how much money you have there. Where does that go into a program then that will pay premiums? Or what is that money used for exactly? What's kind of the format? Can someone explain that?
Sure. Basically, Lead Marquardt, what we're looking at there is that money then would go to fund the reinsurance plan so that when carriers receive bills from clients, they would go through the schedule. Let's just say it's 50 at the bottom end, 250 at the top end, and 70% coinsurance in between. That money would go to pay the carriers for those bills.
Okay.
And the reason I put some flexibility, Lead Marquardt, on the 50, it can't be lower than 50, can't be higher than 250, is because we're kind of flying blind here. I mean, I'll be the first to say it, because we don't know what's happening in D.C. Will there be block grants from the federal government to the states for reinsurance? We don't know. And so I've tried to build some flexibility into this. And there's other ideas out there that will probably move from the Senate that, as I talk, I've spent time with the department, and we'll be spending a lot more time with the department. They've got some different ideas. We need to merge some ideas together. But the way the bill before us works is that money from that account then will go to pay for the claims that the carriers have on the, I guess you can't say high risk, although the department uses that term, higher claims people, we'll say.
And, Mr. Chair, one last silly question, since I'm not on this committee. But then, is that those dollars amount, is it capped at a certain amount, or let's say claims came in that were more than what you're looking at here, would the amount of money that would go into the special account then increase?
Yes.
Okay.
And I want to let you know how. What we're looking at is what Ms. Templin had talked about. Then we're looking at about $30-35 million that we would get that's sitting in the Department of Commerce from the MSHA, last MSHA assessment that wasn't used. And then there is a could be just as there is now a temporary blink on the MSHA tax that could happen. So hopefully we wouldn't get that deep into it, but that's kind of a safety valve until we could come back as a legislature and see what we wanted to do on that. So
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. That's
Representative Loeffler and then McDonald, and then let's go to some testimony, but and then Carlson. I'll go Loeffler, McDonald, Carlson, then we're going to go to testimony. Thank you, Ms. Templin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to point out that the backstop of the MCHA reserves, which wasn't noted on the fiscal note, which you just explained. But I think the committee needs to understand that the funds that come out of the Health Care Access Fund, which we're also responsible for the revenues that go into that fund, are what supports the 100,000 people who run Minnesota Care, which is a program that is much more heavily used in the rural areas. It's been around since the 1990s. It's a really proven program for working poor who don't have access to employer-paid insurance, and it's a very stable, affordable program that's proven. And so this would take resources out of that funding stream for those 100,000 people that we have traditionally served and served well with a very affordable product that's been very stable, unlike the individual insurance market, which has been unstable the last couple of years, and also has about a little over 100,000, about 125,000 people who don't qualify for premium assistance. And so you have these two populations. We have one program that's been around for almost a quarter of a century, and has choices, uses local providers, local hospitals. People are familiar with it. And then we have reinsurance, which is something Minnesota hasn't stepped up for, which is the author's proposal to help stabilize that individual insurance market. But we heard last night that we don't have any good projections yet on whether or not that would reduce rates, stabilize the market. It's an unproven approach. It's a creative approach, but one that we really need to wrestle with if we're going to take revenues from one part of our financing for healthcare to support a new approach, and we're all wrestling with this.
Mr. Cummings, welcome.
Mr. Chair,
and we're on House File 5 right now that we don't have before us.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, after this bill is done, would you mind if I made some comments about the transportation provisions?
You know what? Let's do it this way. You are all over the place. Let's set House File 5 aside since we don't have it before us anyways. And let's hear from the department on the transportation bills that we've heard. You can specify them, Mr. Cummings, or take them as a group, whatever you'd like. So, members, we're taking a little move here from House File 5. To the transportation bills that we've heard. Mr. Cummings was in another committee. Then I'll come back to House File 5 with finishing up with Representative Law, Floyd McDonald Carlson. Then we're going to take testimony. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very, very sorry. Public Safety did hear Representative Marquardt's bill on paid preparers and Representative Slocum's bill on sales suppression devices. So both of those committees approved those, and they are headed closer to this committee. So,
Mr. Cummings, thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. So I'll be directing my comments today on the bills on today's agenda that dedicate general fund dollars towards ongoing transportation purposes. And again, I wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to come before you today. Minnesota's roads and bridges are in worse shape than ever before. More than half of Minnesota's roads are more than 50 years old, and 40% of the state's bridges are more than 40 years old. In the next 3 years, one in five Minnesota roads will pass their useful life, making it increasingly difficult for Minnesota businesses to move their goods to market and for Minnesotans to commute. With Minnesota's population expected to hit 6.2 million and the Twin Cities projected to add 800,000 residents by 2040, the need for long-term transportation solution is clear. MnDOT's roads construction funding will drop by almost 30% next year. Projections today show a total of $711 million for state road construction work. This year we spent more than $1 billion, and our long-term transportation needs continue to grow as MnDOT projects an increasingly $6 billion gap between projected revenues and what it takes to build and maintain an economically competitive system over the next 10 years. Cities and counties without an increase in state funding are forced to either raise property taxes or cut essential services like police and fire protection just to keep pace with crumbling local roads and bridges. There are many types of funding that is currently constitutionally dedicated for roads and bridges. Constitutionally dedicated sources of funding for transportation are limited and include raising the gas tax, license tab, and motor vehicle sales tax. Non-dedicated sources, such as using the state general fund, force trade-offs between other priorities such as education, nursing homes, and the environment. History has shown us that the use of funding, which is not constitutionally dedicated to roads and bridges, can be siphoned away for other priorities. For example, Mr. Chair, in the year 2000, when the state had a general fund surplus, $282 million in general funds were appropriated to MnDOT for trunk highway construction. However, 40% of those funds were canceled in 2003 to help fill the budget deficit, making transportation infrastructure investments with an unstable, non-dedicated funding source represents a poor business decision, as Minnesota's road and bridge assets require long-term, stable funding in order to plan, construct, and maintain our overall system. Governor Dayton has proposed a transportation plan to help bridge the $6 billion state highway transportation funding gap over the next 10 years, with dedicated funding for roads and bridges and increased funding for transit across the state. New funding for road and bridge construction would be provided by a 6.5 cent gross receipts tax on gasoline, bringing the current 1.25% base tax on vehicle registration fee to 1.5%, and raising car registration fees by $10. Governor Dayton would also require MnDOT to spend taxpayer money in an accountable and responsible way by finding savings of 15% for all new revenues, allowing the department to do $6 billion of work for $5.46 billion in new revenue. Governor Dayton remains concerned that a solution that shifts funding from education and health care to transportation is not a sustainable solution. He remains committed to reaching common ground to find a long-term comprehensive transportation solution that builds a better Minnesota for everyone everywhere in our state. We do know this, Mr. Chair. If we do not provide more dedicated funds for roads and bridges, either at the pump, when we buy a license or vehicle, or locally through taxes, the only alternative is to live with a continually degrading transportation system. Yes, after the February forecast, a $1.6 billion balance is projected to be available for the upcoming 18-19 biennial budget. However, federal policy unknowns create a significant risk in the future. If these bills move through the process, Mr. Chair, the Department of Revenue looks forward to working with you, Mr. Chair, Chair Torkelson, and members. We thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Cummings from Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings, for your presentation there. And I only come back to a comment that you just made on talking about funding for transportation. Anything that's not constitutionally dedicated makes poor business sense. And I think that's the words that you used. And yet, since you brought up business, let's talk a little bit about business. Business doesn't have any constitutionally dedicated funding sources for itself. It has to deal with ongoing ups and downs of the funding streams that it gets through its practices and so forth. And yet it still has to deal with infrastructure needs as well. So how do you define good business practices when business has to deal with those ups and downs as regular? And why is it something that that state government can't do?
Mr. Cummings?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Petersburg, I think one of the things as we would begin to work on a transportation alternative is to ensure that businesses that would engage in that work would have the type of certainty to know what is coming up. You know, one of the things that's really important is to provide some certainty for the businesses and the contractors and the workers and others who will be working to develop a long-term sort of response to our infrastructure needs. So I think in order to ensure that there is some certainty, and as I mentioned, there are other instances in the past in which we have used sort of general fund dollars and then created later uncertainty, is would be something that we just don't think would be the right path. And so we think that that is a better way to do that. But, you know, as I mentioned, this is something that we look forward to continuing to work with you on. We know that any approach would have to be a bipartisan approach moving forward, Mr. Chair.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Cummings, for that. You know, I also agree that there is nice to have certainty. I mean, every business out there would like to have a guaranteed business out there. But I think we also have to weigh that on the one hand of having absolute certainty versus a realistic certainty. And so I'm wondering if the department or the governor has any ability to kind of forecast what level of certainty is something that's acceptable versus absolute, because in government we just can't do absolutes, nor should we. So,
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, I think that that is, in terms of what level of certainty is something that we can, you know, continue to work through and talk through. We wanted to ensure that we talked about the approach that provides some sort of constitutionally dedicated resources that we believe would be, that people could rely on, not only at the sort of contractor level, but also at the system design level, to move a larger plan forward. Yet, you know, we look at this budget deficit, this budget surplus, and we really think that this is something that, you know, should be trumpeted as something very good. There's a whole lot of other states that aren't in the type of surplus situation that we're in. You know, however, some of the other notes within the forecast dealing with some federal policy unknowns, and also, you know, we are in sort of the largest expansion, economic expansion since the Great Recession, and they talked about some of the risks about when we could move into a recessionary period, you know, create some significant risks into the future. So I'm not, so in terms of how much risk that we would be willing to take is something that would need much more discussion.
For St. Petersburg.
Thank you, and I'll just, I really appreciate that, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for that discussion, because I think it is a challenge that we have to deal with. And there's also a certainty in regards to consumers and the voting public, too, as well as what can they expect out of the state government. How do we spend the money that they give us to them as well? And most of the constitutionally dedicated programs that you have there doesn't require us to pass it only during surpluses. They can also be passed during another time as well. And so the question is, how do we responsibility, and it's not a question, it's just a statement. Now, how do we as representatives and legislators take on the fiduciary responsibility of the dollars that are entrusted to us by the taxpayers, and how do we utilize them, and how do we prioritize them? And there's always a challenge when we have to prioritize and have the discipline in order to keep up with that. And during hard times, we do have to make tough decisions, and that's part of our responsibility. So I thank you for your discussion, and I continue to look forward to working with you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Just to lay the land, I have Representative Grunhagen and any other members that would have questions for the department. Then we'll go back to House File 5, and I made the statement after talking with Commissioner Bowerly last night that she wanted to testify at 5. I just received a text that she will not be testifying on House File 5. And so, Mr. Cummings, do you wish to testify regarding House File 5, or you
not
certainly may?
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and not at this time. I think
okay.
You know, I think the department, you know, there may be future talks that I know that the administration would likely be working with you, Mr. Chair, on these and other issues.
And again, kind of the point person for the administration is, or the point department is Commerce, but there are several tax issues we said in Sections 9, 10, 15, 16. So
that's right. That's
we will continue to visit with that. So with that, we'll go to Representative Grunhagen. Unless there's other questions, we'll revert back to House File 5. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Cummings. Here's... You know, I know we all understand there's a crisis in the transportation area as far as roads and bridges are concerned. My concern is that we're always piling more money onto the system, or want more money, but we never talk about reforms to bring the cost of the system down. And to give you an example of that, I belong to a group primarily in Carver County that wants to get C-212 completed. And one of the members of the group is a senior lawyer who has worked in the eminent domain area for quite a few years. And he said the last time there was a change to eminent domain in the statute, it primarily created more revenue for lawyers and did nothing for the owner of property or the cost of the project. So we drove the cost of the project up. It enriched lawyers, which I want lawyers to make a good living. Okay? I said that for you, Representative Lashley. But, you know, and then we get from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, we get a statement that we're one of the highest prevailing wage states in the nation, our formula that we use. So, again, does the governor have anything in his proposal that actually looks at making reforms that bring the cost of roads and bridges down rather than the continual spiral up?
Mr. Cummings. Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you know, I cannot speak to all of the reforms that would be happening. I know Commissioner Zelli did come from the private sector, and so one of the things that he's worked very hard on, frankly, with the chamber and with Governor Dayton is to really think about, as this new resources would be coming in, how can they be used most efficiently and effectively? So, you know, Governor Dayton would require that MnDOT to spend taxpayer dollars by finding an average a final savings of 15% on all new revenues. So really, you know, what we talked about was saying that of the $6 billion that would be appropriated to do that work within, you know, $5.4 billion of new revenue, he is really committed to trying to find new savings within that, really pushing to find new and innovative approaches. So I know that that's something that Commissioner Zelli is very interested in. I'm sorry that I can't speak to the specific ways in which that would happen, but I know that there have been many discussions with the Chamber about ensuring that, you know, new revenue would be coupled with the types of reforms that I think people would expect.
Just a quick follow-up. Yeah, thank you for that response. Hopefully I'll become more aware of the reforms that they want to promote. But, you know, and there were a couple comments of people wanting to be on the HHS committee. We can take application there, Representative Marker, if you want to be miserable.
No. Seniority has its privilege.
But we got an analysis of group homes, private versus public. And this is just another example. By
Bruenhagen, could we please be specific to the transportation issues that are...
Okay.
I'd like to get to testimony on House File 5, but please go ahead.
On the OLA report, it showed that public group homes cost twice as much as private ones. So it seems to be prevalent throughout government that we tend to cost way more than the private sector, and we do very little to address reforms that actually bring the cost down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Gruenhagen. Okay, any other questions for members to Mr. Cummings on transportation? Okay, Mr. Cummings. Okay, we will now go back to, and thank you, members, for questions. We'll now go back to House File 5, and I don't recall if Representative Loeffler had completed or not. Representative Loeffler. Well, Mr. Cummings, if you could kind of, got some place you got to be, like?
The only thing, Mr. Chair, is that I really wanted to thank you for the opportunity to address this. I know that you kind of stopped your agenda. Representative Loeffler may have even stopped in mid-question. So I really appreciate Representative Loeffler's patience, as well as your patience, Mr. Chair, to allow me to address the committee.
And thank you, Mr. Cummings. And we realize that during deadline week, people have to be eight places at the same time, and you should see my afternoon calendar. So with that being said, thank you for your testimony on the transportation issue, Mr. Cummings. Let's go back to House File 5 that we will go back to, but we don't really have it, if you know what I mean. Okay, so with that, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Cummings, we always appreciate your insights, and so I don't feel in any way interrupted. I think the point I was making was just that this does take revenues from another fund, that we are responsible for making sure the revenues are adequate to meet the commitments of the state, and that's what supports our 25-year program of Minnesota Care, which is a proven insurance model that is proven to meet the needs of working people who can't afford health insurance on their own and yet don't have access to employer coverage. And so we have two different populations competing to try and find an affordable access point, and I think we're going to have to wrestle with that. And I'm not yet convinced that this will have enough of an impact to stabilize the market that we're hoping for. And so there's other issues to be wrestled with other than the monetary issues before this committee.
And, Representative Loeffler, your points are very well taken. I think that it goes quite a ways to stabilizing the market, but not necessarily lowering prices. I think it will, but I'm not going to go on record and say it's going to lower them by X, because no matter what you say, you're wrong at some point. But your point's very well taken. We had a very lengthy hearing in HHS Finance last night, a very thoughtful hearing, and with a lot of questions. And members, normally when I bring a bill before any committee, it's, this is the bill, this is what I want, this way it's going to be, here it is. That's not House File 5, because there are so many moving parts here. We don't know what the feds are doing. We don't know whether there's ideas coming from Commerce. There's a Halverson bill out there. There's other things that we're looking at. So this, by the time we move this to Ways and Means, if we have the votes to do it, I'm not saying this is the final product. And I am open to talking to everyone on all the issues on this, and we'll be having a Schultz amendment we'll be talking about when we get through testimony. And so, members, my intention not to go from 5 to 10 tonight. I would like to get a lot of this done today, but if we need more discussion at 5, we will certainly take that. I'm not going to cut anybody off. Okay, unless Ruba starts talking, then I would. Okay, so with that, Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, then, I know we want to get on to testifiers. So the Health Care Access Fund, of course, is phasing out. And was that the year 2018, 2019, I believe, is the phase out of that? And then would it be fair to say, Chairman, that perhaps taking from the Health Care Access Fund and bringing it into this, the new special revenue fund for the insurance premiums, that is still going to be paying the bills for those populations that we're addressing the Health Care Access Fund? Is that a fair statement?
Yes, and as you know, I'm not on HHS Finance, and we have some members here that are that could speak to this probably better than I could, but the way I understand it is the Health Care Access Fund, by a law signed by Governor Dayton in 2001, 2002, in there somewhere, phases out or eliminates the Health Care Access Fund 2019. Cool. When was that?
He wasn't governor then.
Okay, when was he first governor?
2011.
Oh, man, I just lost the decade. The lost decade. Okay, so like sometime when Governor Dayton signed the bill, early in his administration. Well,
what did I say? 2001?
That's what I meant. Yes, just missed a one there. Okay, so that being said, Health Care Access Fund gone in 2019. There is currently a surplus in that fund, and I'm sure that everybody on this planet wants to dip into that at some point. I do not believe, and maybe Representative Lofty could help me on this, I do not believe that by the monies we move here, I believe that there's still enough money in the Health Care Access Fund to keep things going as we know them right now. Representative Lofty?
Mr. Chair, we didn't have any testimony to that point in HHS Finance yesterday, and we didn't have a fiscal note, so I don't know that we can say that. I think that there has always been a hope, I would say, within the medical provider community that we would phase out at some point the provider tax and shift it onto general fund and general revenues. That has always been the ask of that sector. And so I think that was part of the agreement, expectation that in 2011 there would be plenty of time to work that out before we hit the time frame. There was no discussion at that time of discontinuing Minnesota Care because it's been a popular and effective and successful program. I would disagree a little bit with Representative McDonald, and I don't think these are at all equivalent populations. Minnesota Care serves the working poor. It's sliding fee based on family size. And I don't remember off the top of my head the exact income numbers, but the self-insured market that this bill would probably more help the people who are buying on their own who make too much to qualify for Minnesota Care's assistance are typically small business owners. They're people who have, they may be farmers, they have a higher income profile, so Minnesota Care isn't available to them. Even the premium tax credits of the federal government are not available to them. So this is a much higher income population. I'd say that if you put $400 million over 2 years into any industry, you will stabilize that industry no matter what it is. Whether or not it will have any impact on the actual premium levels, how much, whether it will lower high deductibles. It would be really great if we could hear some financial testimony from the witnesses on that, because we just spent $313 million for 1 year to lower premiums 25% for this higher income group. And so this is, you know, $200 million a year. I don't think we can expect that kind of an impact, but welcome the input.
Okay. And thank you, Mr. Loeffler. And before we get testimony here, I'm going to go to McDonald and Carlson. But again, when we get into testimony, I want sections 9 and 10, 15, 16. I'm really going to try and stick to that. And we're kind of talking about that now because we're talking about money. Lead McDonald. Vice Chair. Okay, and we'll wrap it up for this portion. Members will have questions later also. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was looking at the list of testifiers, and I'm not sure if we're going to be hearing from Health and Human Services or Commerce, but I do have a question, and that's the submission of a waiver. And if somebody at least could address that during the testimony or maybe our staff, the application, according to the bill, has to be submitted by July 5th, and then the reinsurance is activated July 1st. And so basically my question is, how long does it typically take to get a waiver? Because this the timeline could completely collapse if the feds take more than 6 months to grant a waiver. And so I think as we move forward, we should have an answer. At least I'd like an answer to that question, if not today, this morning, this evening, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you. And I don't even think it'll be this evening because we do have the department here. I really don't want to go to the department right now. Because that's, and we're talking taxes right now. We had that testimony in Commerce Committee, and Mr. Peter Brickwood has the answer. Let's just get that on the record here. It's not to do with the bill today, but let's just get it on the record. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwood, Assistant Commissioner from the Commerce Department, Representative Carlson, you're quite correct. The timeline is aggressive. But there would be time for the federal government, based on the timeline for 1332 waiver application, to approve it for plan year 2018 if the enabling legislation contained herein is complete by the end of this month.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I know you want to have it on the tax questions, but all this interacts. I mean, in terms of the tax dollars that are collected, how they're expended, and what that timeline ultimately is. And as he pointed out, and that was my reaction, was that it's a pretty aggressive timeline. Now, one thing that we maybe can do, there are, I think, at least two states that have been granted waivers. I think Oregon may be one, and I think I heard Alaska or Washington or something, a couple of West Coast states anyway, to find out what the timeline was when they were granted a waiver. And that's my only concern as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is a very valid concern, Chair Carlson. I think Alaska is in the process. I don't know if any waivers have been granted yet from anybody, Mr. Brickwoody.
Mr. Chairman, no, Alaska is in process with a waiver right now, as is Hawaii on a very sort of separate matter related to their small group, but I don't believe, actually I'll have to double check on the Hawaii one, but Alaska, which is doing a state-based reinsurance related waiver request, is in the midst of the approval process now with the federal government.
Sure. But the point is how long it took, Mr. Chairman, and how long it's been in progress then, because our timeline here is pretty tight.
It is, and I thank you for that. Okay, let's go to testimony, then we'll come back to member questions, and then any amendments we can discuss them now. We'll talk about them tonight for sure. Okay, Mr. Bentley Graves, two sections, 9, 10, 15, and 16. You state your name if you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber. I'd like to call members' attention to Section 16, Subdivision 4, or I guess B4. This is the provision that Chair Davis referenced that would bring back essentially the MCHA assessment, which is more or less a premium tax on fully insured products in Minnesota. This is a provision that we at the Chamber have a significant concern about. And we have that concern because right now small employers and individuals in the fully insured market pay about 10 cents of every fully insured dollar in taxes of some kind. That's as compared to under 3 cents for fully insured products, self-insured products. So that's a big difference and puts small employers and individuals at a significant cost disadvantage. And so we look at the possibility of bringing the MCHA tax back as a significant concern for small employers, as we see that as a small employer health insurance tax. We appreciate the kind of other funding mechanism, the kind of menu approach that does bring some shared responsibility to this program. But we would also note that just at absent the MCHA assessment potentially coming back, the other revenue sources, or the other revenue sources that are on the table, most of which are also paid by the fully insured market. So, the fully insured market is certainly shouldering a lot of the cost burden for this program, and I know there's a lot of interest in making sure that is the case. But we would strongly urge folks to take a very careful look at bringing the MCHA assessment back as that being particularly harmful to small employers and individuals.
Okay. Ms. Dalton, Mr. Graves said bringing the MCHA assessment back. Isn't the MCHA assessment still on the books? Or Joel, Mr. Michael? Isn't the MCHA, sorry, Pat. Or Ms. Dalton, sorry. Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's technically correct, but it's really operating.
So, it's already on the books, sports fans. Okay. With that being said, I'm going to go through the people I have to testify, then we'll come back. Representative Schultz, you're first. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Representative Schultz to Mr. Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Graves, so would your group be supportive of spreading an assessment more widely across both self-insured and fully insured plans to do reinsurance?
Mr. Graves.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think what we know for sure is that the menu approach that's currently in the bill for the first couple of years works to get us through the uncertainty of the federal level. I know that the federal bill that's out now, the Republican bill from the House that's out now, has significant dollars presumably coming to states for things like this. I think the bill, other than the assessment, has a good funding approach to get us to the point where we have some certainty about what other federal funding sources might be available. We're certainly open to other potential options to look at spreading that out, but I don't know exactly what that looks like or how that might function, but certainly open to that conversation.
Thank you. So Mr. Chair, Mr. Graves, so I encourage you to look at the amendment to put assessment on all claims, which would spread it out to self-insured and fully insured plans. And if you are opposed to a fee or assessment on just the small businesses and fully insured, then I hope you will be supportive of my amendment.
Mr. Graves?
I would be happy to take a look at that, Representative.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Lars Nygstad, Policy Director Isaiah. He's next. You're not even on the list. Well, I'll get you on there. Please state your name and your address for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Lars Nygstad, Policy Director of Isaiah. Isaiah is a statewide organization of clergy, congregations, and people of faith working for racial and economic justice. Clergy every week hear news stories, if not every day, of problems with health and, of course, problems with health care and health care costs and health care bills. We appreciate the real concern here from yourself, Chair Davids, and the members of this committee about the looming collapse of the individual market and your leadership in moving this discussion forward. However, we're concerned that before rushing to create a giant, costly, new government-backed reinsurance program, there's a number of unanswered questions that have not been fully understood. And the reason some of these questions haven't been fully understood is because of the lack of transparency in the insurance industry.
Mr. Nygstad, can you please refer to Sections 9, 10, 15, and 16? I'm going to be asking every testifier to do that. That's what we're talking about today.
You bet. So all of these questions come down to the funding of this program and the impact of the funding of the program.
There you go.
So the impact of the funding of the program, we understand that there's real urgency to stabilize the market, but without understanding the reasons why people are leaving the market, how much of that is due to premium increases, what is driving those premium increases, a lot of that has to do with the black box of the insurance industry and the lack of transparency there. We're concerned about the financing. In particular, the use of the Healthcare Access Fund dollars. There was a question raised from Representative Loeffler of the Minnesota Care that is funded through the Healthcare Access Fund partially. Covers families up to 200% of the federal poverty level, which for a family of four is $48,500. So essentially, we're concerned that this program may take from families earning under $48,000 to help families earning over $48,000 by setting up this reinsurance program. We also are very concerned, given the very real federal threat of the repeal of the ACA or replacement of the ACA, to change Medicaid from an entitlement into a form of a block grant or a per cap payment. That will leave Minnesota taxpayers and vulnerable Minnesotans left holding the bag. So to put money into the insurance industry for the reinsurance program while we're facing potentially a huge hole in our budget based on federal action in the next several weeks, we think would be unwise. We'd like to lift up the Minnesota Care Buy-In option as a way to administer those
to sections 9 and 10, 15 and 16.
Yes. To make sure that there's an option for folks to have access to a provider anywhere in the state. In addition, we'd like to just lift up the contrast of the study that went into the paid family medical leave insurance program. There's a 200-page study and a multi-year process that went into that.
Instead to sections 9, 10, 15, and 16.
And this process, which is being hurried because of the very real concerns, we think needs a little more time and a little more airing and study in order to make a wise decision. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Nickstead, if you talk to Commissioner Rothman, time is something we don't have. Questions to Mr. Nickstead? Thank you very much, sir. Okay, item next, Jim Grotz.
My name is Jim Grotz.
How are the Delano Tigers doing?
Great.
Awesome. Okay, sections. Mr. Grotz, state your name, who works for the record, into sections 9, 10, and 15, 16. Everybody's going to get that.
To the right.
That's what we're talking about. Vice Chairman Connell.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Grotz. Sorry to interrupt, but you neglected to say not only are they doing good, they're doing great.
Right.
Because the Delano boys hockey team is playing in the state tomorrow at 11 o'clock.
That's correct.
For the first time in the Delano history.
Awesome.
Thank you.
So
awesome. I'm here testifying as an individual. And I have one
thing, Vice Chair McDonald, to sections 9 and 10, 15 and 16.
Right. Right. And those sections are great, Mr. Chair.
Right. I have one question which I just really couldn't seem to find answered here, and this concerns gap accounting versus non-gap accounting and how we're going to account for the money. If they come in, if the health plans come in with claims, what accounting methods are we going to require them to follow? This is to protect the interests of the Minnesota, hardworking Minnesota taxpayers.
And I would suggest you talk to Mr. Michael after the meeting because that's not in sections 9, 10, 15, or 16.
Very good.
Mr. Grotz.
Yep. Thank you.
That's it?
Yep.
Okay. Next, Chris Connery. Strategic Campaigns Director, Take Action Minnesota, to sections 9, 10, 15, and 16 of the bill. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Sure. Good morning. Chairman Davids, members of the committee, my name is Chris Connery. I'm here today on behalf of Take Action Minnesota. We're a grassroots organization that advocates for racial, gender, and economic justice at the local, state, and federal level. I'm here today to raise our concerns about House File 5 as amended. We have concerns about the cost, transparency, and accountability of the reinsurance system this bill proposes, but would like to focus today on its financing. So this plan is financed by five and eventually six different sources. And if I understood the testimony from HHS Finance last night, this includes the $163 million in the next biennium from the 1% gross premiums tax in Section 9, the $140 million from the general fund in Section 10, in Section 12, the existing monetary reserves of MSHA at about $35 million, and then a one-time transfer from the Healthcare Access Fund in Section 17, in addition to federal funds that might apply, and eventually, starting in 2019, a member assessment on insurers who are part of the program. So from 1981 to 2006, the MSHA program as it existed in that day was funded largely by two sources, enrollee premiums and assessments on insurers. And the amount of those assessments on insurers varied anywhere from 35 to 55%, but usually ended up being roughly about half the cost. And so this is not the same MSHA program we had back then. It's a different form, but the same core questions still remain for us. The first is, what percentage of this will be paid by member assessments. Will it be 50% or 35 to 55% or something less? And then the second question we have is really about the impact of this financing, which is a question on patient premiums. Will this investment of roughly $400 million per in the next biennium actually result in lower premiums for patients? Thank you for your time today. I do appreciate the chance to testify.
Thank you very much, sir. Questions for members? Thank you very much, sir. Next, we go to Ms. Commit. Here's what I have. I have Ms. Commit, Krinke, Mr. Griffin, anyone else, and then we'll go to member questions. And I think it would be my plan at 5 when we actually have the bill before us to discuss the Schultz Amendment or any other amendments that would come before the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Catherine Commit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is the trade association for the state's 7 nonprofit health plans. Thank you for the opportunity to provide some comments. The Minnesota Council of Health Plans strongly supports the enactment of the reinsurance program as found in this bill. Such action is critical for stabilizing and sustaining the health insurance options for Minnesotans. And specifically referencing the sections 15, 16, and 9 and 10, we support a broad-based funding mechanism, and I think it's really important that a mechanism be stable and reliable for 2018. That's really important so this could serve as a bridge to get us through 2018. There may be other funding sources, other ways of collecting these types of revenues that would go into the reinsurance program that may be better, but we want to make sure that there's that a solid bridge to get us to 2018. And I do have some comments that I don't know if it's appropriate right now to make with respect to Representative Schultz's amendment, because
it wouldn't be appropriate at
okay,
this time.
Okay, then I'll make them at 5 o'clock.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Unless we have some time to come back to start on the amendment. Thank you. Mr. Griffin's question for who? Ms. Commit? Okay, Ms. Commit, come back, please. A Schultz question. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when health plans exceed the $250,000 cap that's in this bill, what happens to those claims? How are they paid?
Ms. Commit?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, your question is what happens when that particular claim exceeds $250,000? In that case, then the expense or the amount of the claim over $250,000 reverts back to the health plan and they pay it.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do the plans have reinsurance policies to pay those outlier claims?
Ms. Commit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz, I don't know the answer to that question. I can find out for you.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you. Can you find out by tonight?
Sure.
Great.
Ms. Commit? I'm sure they do. I would hope they would.
Well, my question, Mr. Chair, is in total, the three major health plans have $2.5 billion in reserve and close to $6.8 billion in assets. So my question is, how much reinsurance do they need? And many of them, the smaller ones, have reinsurance policies. So I'd just like to get more into that information tonight.
Yeah, I'm sure she can provide it. And just so members know, this is a personal statement for me and not regarding Section 9, 10, 15, and 16. I don't want to buy a policy from an insurance company that doesn't have a lot of money. Just a thought. Okay, item next, let's go to Ms. Krinke.
No, Mr. Griffin.
You're out of order, Mr. Griffin.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
So you can sit there. You're next. I have Krinke, Griffin, and then we're going to start talking about the Schultz Amendment. Ms. Krinke.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association, representing 142 hospitals statewide. Did have an opportunity to testify last night, so I will be brief. I want to follow what the chairman has instructed. One of the reasons that the Hospital Association, and we wrestled with this and wrestled with this, but one of the reasons we said we were okay with this bill, very supportive of what Representative Davids is trying to do here, is that the bill does have a balanced approach with shared responsibility from multiple sources of funding. It is not exclusively one source of funding. So in Section 9 is money from the general fund dollars. Section 9, Section 9 is the 1% HMO premium tax. That is money that does go into the Health Care Access Fund, and that does cause concern. That said, it is money that the premiums are paid by the health plans, and we feel that that is an appropriate use for reinsurance. So that is in Section 9. Section 10 is the general fund dollars, which is about $70 million each year. Section 17 is some money from the Health Care Access Fund. It's $80 million. And then Section 16 is, if needed, a restart up of the MSHA assessment. So we feel that this approach, taking a little money here and a little money there, is a balanced approach. We are sensitive to what Representative Loeffler said, and that there's a lot of pressures on the Health Care Access Fund. And quite frankly, with the upcoming repeal of the ACA, there's going to be even more pressures on it. But that said, we recognize what Representative Davids has said. We've got to get this bill done relatively quickly so that we can try to stabilize the insurance market for products next year. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your work on this bill, and we would support a shared responsibility plan.
Questions for Ms. Krinke? Okay, with that, you are now in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
My name is Phil Griffin. I'm speaking today on behalf of America's Health Insurance Plans AHIP in favor of House File 5. AHIP is the National Trade Association whose members provide coverage for health care and related services to Americans. AHIP represents approximately 1,300 health insurance plans that provide coverage to millions of Americans. Our members include the plans who make up the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. AHIP would like to echo the comments of Ms. Commit in support of this bill as it regards Sections 9, 10, 15, and 16. I would additionally like to thank Representative Davids. Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, members of the committee, the individual market in Minnesota is in crisis. Thank you for your attention to this issue.
And thank you for addressing Sections 9, 10, 15, and 16. Any questions of Mr. Griffin? Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Now, before we go to start talking, thank you very much to all who testified. Okay, item next, just logistically here in a little bit, we'll be recessing, not adjourning, we'll be recessing. I have it written here, recess. I did that one time where we're supposed to recess and I adjourned. That doesn't go well. So we will go into recess. Mr. Michael, could you kind of describe to us what we're going to be having for amendments when we come back? Technical amendments. We know we have the Schultz Amendment. Technical amendments.
Mr. Chairman, there will be, a technical amendment that it's not drafted yet because we're waiting for the engrossment from the revisor's office, but it will correct or add some cross-references that we're missing and make some fiscal changes to make it clear what fiscal year's funding relates to and so forth, including that for people who have seen the A9 and the A7 amendment, they will become an A10 amendment that incorporates those changes in the second engrossment.
So members, please take note of that so we know where we're going at 5. Okay, with that being said, let's go to the Schultz Amendment that we... Do we have a copy of that? Okay, members, you'll be receiving that very shortly here. And so by going over this amendment, then it'll be my intention to come back in at 5, go through the amendments. Any other final questions? Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. While we're just waiting to get the Schultz Amendment, I think it's important for us to really talk about the tax implications of reestablishing the MSHA assessment on fully insured plans. And for those of you who don't deal with insurance much, fully insured plans are primarily bought by small businesses. They're not big enough to self-insure. There's a federal law called ERISA that says if you take on all the risk and responsibility of your own insurance plan, then you're exempt from state regulation. So it was really designed by Congress for multinational companies like airlines who didn't want to have a totally different health plan in Wisconsin than Minnesota than Illinois. But the insurance company have been more and more effective in figuring out ways to get smaller locally based companies to self-insure. The state is self-insured. Many school districts are self-insured. I think last I'd heard, we're probably at about 45% of those insured who are self-insured, including when we just passed the co-op language for agricultural co-ops to offer. They had three times before gotten permission to establish health insurance benefits, and they didn't want to comply with all the state laws and consumer protections. Now, in the bill that we just passed, they are going to be self-insured, so they don't have to do that. And so we probably have about half of the market that doesn't pay, and so it disproportionately falls on small businesses. And I know this committee's had a lot of discussion about small businesses and the burdens that they're facing, and I think we need to know that this MCHA assessment, if it's applied to fully insured products, will be an addition. It will target them more than other players in the market buying insurance.
Thank you, Mr. Blaffer. Okay, so we'll be visiting now. We don't actually have it before us, but we'll be visiting about the H000583 amendment, which is the Schultz amendment. Is there anyone in the audience that would wish to testify on behalf of this? Richard Schultz, is Mr. Nelson
here? He's coming tonight.
He's coming tonight. Okay. Tell him only to talk about sections 9, 10, 15, and 16.
Okay.
Anyone else wish supporting the amendment or with concerns? Okay, so we'll take, it'd be my intention then to get the bill in the shape it needs to be in to get out of here if it has the votes, and I would never assume that. And then we'll briefly talk about, finish up with your amendment. I think you can describe what it is pretty clearly here. So with that, to your amendment that we don't have before us.
We do have it before us.
No, we don't.
Oh, not officially? I will introduce it now, though. I mean, I will talk about it.
You can move it.
Okay, this is an alternative way to generate revenue for the reinsurance program. And this is something I've been working with Peter Nelson. And so I consider it as a bipartisan approach. And it's much more broad-based, so it's more efficient fee assessment on all claims generated. So it gets around the ERISA preemption because it's assessing a fee on all claims by third-party administrators, TPAs, and all health insurance carriers. So it's a way to spread out the cost of this reinsurance program among more players and addresses the concerns of, I think, the business community, especially small businesses. So I think we should give serious consideration to this as an alternative way to generate revenue. And I know there's lots of other ideas, but I'd like to, at least this to be on the table when you guys go into conference committee to discuss ways to generate revenue. And it's been attempted and it's been implemented in other states, and they found through the court systems when they were challenged by ERISA preemption that was found to be valid, that you can use this fee on medical claims to generate revenue.
Thank you very much, Representative Schultz, for that. Okay, and we will have Mr. Peter Nelson testifying on behalf of it. I think he's from the, what's his group?
Center for the American Experiment.
The pretty conservative group.
It is very conservative.
This may be too conservative for me. I need to get...
Well, I'm not that conservative. I would say I'm a moderate.
Oh, so this is for by the Koch brothers?
No. Well, it might be. I don't know.
Okay, just wanted to check.
I'm just saying, if from an economic perspective, this is better because it's broad-based. It's not narrow.
With that, we have somebody here. Ms. Komet. To the amendment that we do not have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Schultz. This amendment was addressed last night in the House HHS Finance Committee, and I did make some comments there. I wanted to clarify some of those comments I made about the amendment before the committee last evening, and based on my discussions with some of our attorneys for the health plans, here's what I understand to be the situation. In Michigan, this tax was challenged as being preempted under federal ERISA. That challenge was rejected by the federal district court there and then by the federal appeals court for Michigan, which is the Sixth Circuit. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case, which does not indicate any view on the merits of the case. But Minnesota is in a different federal circuit, so that decision doesn't govern here. If this tax were enacted and challenged in federal court here, a federal appeals court, the Eighth Circuit, could reach the same decision as Michigan, as the Michigan court, or could reach the opposite decision. Federal courts of appeals routinely reach different decisions from other circuits. That's called a split among the circuits and is a common reason the U.S. Supreme Court takes up the case. If this tax were enacted in Minnesota, it seems highly likely it would also be challenged here as it was in Michigan. Given the urgency to bring stability to the individual market for 2018, we think it is better public policy to fund the reinsurance program with a reliable funding source for 2018. These are interesting legal issues that may ultimately be resolved through the court system. However, because of the success of this tax in Michigan, it is a tax proposal worth exploring further here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Schmidt? Thank you. And Representative Schultz, I really do thank you for bringing this idea forward, and we will have some more. And if it doesn't go anywhere today, I consider everything still on the table, from the department to the governor's office, everything's on the table. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Commit.
Ms. Commit. Chair Dabney.
Good to see you. As you know, I'm blissfully ignorant when it comes to this area, and I prefer to stay that way, but I don't think I'm going to get that. How many of your, I believe it was 7-member businesses would be impacted by House File 5 as it currently is stated, established?
Ms. Matt
Reeds.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, it would be probably about 5 of the health plans. One of my plans doesn't participate in the individual market. They have a relatively small footprint in southwestern Minnesota. And then one of my other plans focuses only on government programs.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So here's where I go off into the deep end. How many would be affected by the Schultz Amendment?
Ms. Kmet.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, as I understand what Representative Schultz's amendment is, it's a means for collecting revenue to be used for the purposes of paying or funding a reinsurance pool. So it doesn't, it is a tax, I guess, that would be applied against all of the claims that are that occur for all of these plans. So it would primarily, it would appear that it primarily would affect those all the claims that any health plan processes, including their self-funded claims.
Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Commit.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. We'll take one more question, and then we, if you have questions, more questions, so we can do them at 5. Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if it's more appropriate to wait till tonight, I could, but it was more a question for Representative Schultz about sort of if this is expanded over a wider pool, if the collection or tax would be lower, and I see there's some mechanism in here for refunding of overpayments, and I guess I'm just curious as to how that would work.
Thank you.
Representative Schultz, don't you have done this up to 1%?
It says 1%, but it's really supposed to be up to 1%. We don't know. I'm going to guess it's going to be 0.5% or less. And then that really makes it for each individual a few pennies rather than more. And, you know, it's revenue collected from all of the health plans, self-insured and fully insured, but they all benefit. In the current system, they're all benefiting, but they're not all paying because it's taking care of those who are high risk, those claims. Here, they're all paying and they're all benefiting. So I see it as a win-win, even for those that have to pay under my amendment.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz. I do think it's an interesting idea, and I think obviously the legality is a critical point here, but I'm just wondering if there's any way to calculate from what we know about the fully self-insured but the marketplace in Minnesota, how much would be collected and how much of that up to, you suggested maybe 0.5%, but I'm wondering if that information is being prepared or if we're able to put it together.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, so we have an all-payer claims database, so we can have Commerce and Revenue give us some estimates when Chair Davis is working through his bill. We just can't get it by tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Schultz.
With that, members, we have 15 minutes to go over the floor. I want to respect your time to get over there. Please keep House File 5 stuff and amendments in your save file or in your, save file. It's going to be a lot of new stuff, but keep what you have, so if you need to get back to it. So with that, members, thank you for your work today. It's not my intention to have a lengthy meeting at 5. I want to respect your evening. With that being said, good government all the time. We are in recess till 5 in room 10. The House Tax Committee will come back to order. Members, what we have is, I will move again House File 5, and this is actually a vote. It would be to go to the Ways and Means Committee. We have a bit of unfinished business from earlier. We have the Schultz Amendment that we're going to take some testimony on. Do we have the amendment? Oh, we have first of all, the A11. Okay, members, I will move the A11 amendment, which is the technical one that Mr. Michael talked about this morning during Tax Committee. So I want all the members to have it. Do all the members present have the... Okay, members, I will move the H0005A11 amendment. That basically includes what Mr. Michael is talking about, the A7 and the A9 amendments. He said it would be the A10 amendment, but actually it's the A11 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Representative Erickson. It passes. Now we have the bill as amended. Before us, and we're very fortunate today to have Mr. Peter Nelson from the Center of the American Experiment. If you please state your name and just repeat what I said so we know who you are. Representative Schultz moves the H0005A13 amendment. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Peter Nelson. I'm the Vice President and Senior Policy Fellow at Center of the American Experiment.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. So I have looked into some different ways to fund this reinsurance program, and one of the ways that I've discovered that I believe has some very strong legal basis is to charge an assessment to TPAs. And you can do that in a couple different ways. You can charge an assessment to TPAs through just a percentage of the claims that they pay. That is something that the state of Michigan does, and I'll talk a little bit about a lawsuit that was just resolved in Michigan. So that's what Michigan does. And the state of Maine actually developed a really unique program that we really should be taking a very close look at. It wasn't very long running, but that program in Maine started on July 1st, 2012, and it ran through to the end of 2013. But like our MCHA program, the state of Maine's program, was stopped because of the ACA. And I will note that the Maine program triggers back on at the beginning of 2018. They've actually gone forward and re-triggered that program unless something else happens in the meantime. And so then this program was funded by a $4 fee, a per person per month fee on anyone that's enrolled through a fully insured plan or through a TPA. And most recently, this issue was resolved in the Sixth Circuit because a lot of people were challenging this sort of approach because they thought it might be preempted by ERISA. ERISA generally preempts any state laws that try to control employee benefit plans. But it doesn't necessarily control state employee benefit plans that only indirectly have only an indirect economic impact. And that opinion goes back to a Supreme Court case from back in the early 1990s called Travelers. And what's interesting for Minnesota is that after Travelers, we passed our provider tax. And after we passed our provider tax, we had a case that went up to the Eighth Circuit called Boyle v. Anderson. And in Boyle v. Anderson, our provider tax was upheld. And it was upheld in light of that Travelers case. And it was upheld in contrast to a Fifth Circuit case where they said the Fifth Circuit case was really, basically they said it was not good law anymore. They basically said this the Fifth Circuit had a surcharge, just kind of like the one I'm contemplating right now. They had a surcharge on TPAs of 2.5%. It wasn't on claims paid. It was 2.5% of their revenue from their administrative fees. But this was considered a much less economic, that had much less of an economic impact by the Eighth Circuit than what was upheld by the Supreme Court in Travelers. And so from my legal perspective, I think that we have a very strong case to be made that this is an approach that we can consider and that we can have some assurance that it will succeed moving forward, because it's right now in the Sixth Circuit, it went through an interesting history. This issue went through an interesting history. The Sixth Circuit affirmed this approach back in 2014. But then the next year, the Supreme Court, or maybe it was 2016, the Supreme Court overruled and preempted this case in Vermont called Gobiel. And that was a case about the all-payer claims database. We have one of those. Vermont had one of those. And Vermont required everyone involved, fully insured, self-insured, to give them data, just like we do. The Supreme Court struck that down. They said that that was preempted because it was a clear regulation of the self-insured employer. Clearly, giving up data is a clear, direct regulation, and so the Supreme Court preempted that, and after that preemption, the Supreme Court asked the Sixth Circuit to reconsider their prior affirmation of this Michigan tax. And upon reconsideration, they affirmed once again, and since then, on January 9th, I think, 2017 of this year, the Supreme Court denied cert. And so that is a very, so that's pretty clear case law right now, I think, that supports taking an approach like this. And when we're looking forward, I think this is one of the better approaches out there for funding, because it gets to some of the issues that a lot of us have been talking about, that you've heard a lot about in committee, on the benefits of having a broad base. Right now, or in the past, MSHA was funded on a very narrowing base of only fully insured. And that was a problem for a couple of reasons. One, of course, because it was a narrowing base. But
Mr. Nelson, Mr. Paul, are you going to go?
I'm going to go for just about two more minutes.
Please proceed.
Okay. That was on a narrowing base, and that's that obviously made problems for us. And on top of that, many of the people that found themselves in the individual market had at one point been in that self-insured marketplace and had been in other fully insured marketplaces. So this is a broad problem for the entire market. And so it does require, in my opinion, some shared expenditures. It's not fair to force a farmer who happens to be required to use the individual marketplace if he wants to be insured to use this small pool of people that are very high risk when he's chosen that profession. And so I would like to see us adopt that broader base so that farmer can have some broader shared risk with the rest of the employer-based marketplace. And in addition, I'll finally say this also provides a stable base of funding. We want a stable individual insurance market. We want a stable base of funding that's not subject to the politics, I think, of our budget. Generally speaking, I don't like targeting resources to one thing. I like the fact that every year we prioritize things in a budget, but in this case, a stable insurance market, I think, offers a good reason to make an exception to that rule. With that, I will be open for questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions? Anyone else in the audience want to testify for the amendment or with concerns? Okay, questions for members? Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Nelson. I think you made your points well in terms of looking for stability and wanting stability in the insurance market. But this is being proposed now as an ongoing program, and we haven't heard much testimony about the stability that it would actually offer in terms of what it would do on affordability and some of those other things. And since you weren't able to participate yesterday, do you have any thoughts about that? Because this really is a new approach, as the chairman has been upfront about.
Very briefly, Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, right now I think the current program that we have is okay for a temporary program. I would want to make sure that anything we're doing today is considered temporary. I'd want to put some end dates on these things so that we can have time to study the stability of the marketplace and to study different approaches. I don't necessarily believe that this reinsurance approach is the best approach for coupling with our current risk adjustment system that we have in place. And who knows whether that's going to stick around under federal law. But they kind of both do similar things, so they might overlap, and some of the research that I've seen shows that that they might not be as compatible as we would like. There's other approaches out there, and we need to keep ourselves open to make sure that we're considering those, because this very well might not lead to a stable marketplace. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And apart from what he was going to say, I was going to ask you, Mr. Chair, about whether or not you had considered making this a more short-term project with some reassessment of the impact, because that's typically what we've done when we've done major changes in program or delivery and we're not quite sure. I mean, you've been very straightforward about, you know, I think you've used the word flying blind, because we're dealing with a lot of unknowns, some of which we can have research on, some of which we don't, and some of which are being controlled by people in D.C. that we have no ability to really understand what's going to happen. And so I'm wondering if you would be open to, you know, making this more of a shorter program with an evaluation, you know, kind of as opposed to the current bill, which right now has a trigger to reinstate the MCHA assessment, which, of course, small businesses don't want to have reinstated. And, you know, we could avoid some of that consternation if we were to make it a more focused, let's see how it goes sort of approach.
And thank you very much, Representative Loeffler. This House File 5, as it's going to be leaving the House, hopefully, is a short-term fix. It's a short-term fix for 2018-19. The issues in House File 5 are not long-term forever type things like we usually try to do. So the answer is yes. I'm definitely open to other ideas. In fact, to Representative Schultz's amendment, I think there's some merit here, and I think it needs to be investigated further as we go along. I'll be meeting with Mr. Nelson and with Representative Schultz more in the Senate as this thing goes on, the governor's office. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of variables, so the answer is yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because I think that would, as a revenue strategy, I think that would be a wise way to go, and I think it would allow us to get the information to see what kind of adjustments we might need to make. We'd have next session for sure before the next round of the individual market having to create new products, new prices, and so that would give us time to actually assess this first round.
And to that point, Representative Loeffler, I agree 100% because my goal is to have a market in 2018. I think that's serious. That's what this bill is going to help us do. And we will be assessing what does the market in 18 look like. If it looks like 17, well, we didn't do the right thing here. It didn't work. And we'll have to reassess at that time. But like I said, this is not a long-term fix. I don't try to sell it as a long-term fix. And I said I'm open to all funding sources, all ideas. We have the Halverson bill tomorrow in Commerce Committee. I'm going to study that to see if there's some merit or some combination thereof. And I don't have the answers, though. But no, this is an ongoing situation that I think we have to get on quickly here, and it will be monitored very closely.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Schultz, you want to wrap up discussion on your amendment, please?
Well, I just want to thank the committee for hearing the bill and thank the chair for considering it and hopefully keep it on the table. So I'm not going to ask for a vote on the amendment.
Are you withdrawing the amendment?
I'm withdrawing the amendment.
Representative Schultz withdraws the A13 amendment. And just so members know, maybe this is it. I don't know. We'll be working more with Mr. Nelson. We'll be working more with the governor's office, the Commerce Department. We have to put something together very quickly. And I am certainly not, Representative Schultz, by any means dismissing this as out of hand. This might be it. I don't know that. So with that, any other discussion? I will renew my motion that House File 5, as amended, be, what's the word you can't say passed? I got sued about that.
Re-referred
to the Committee on Ways and Means. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, members, for your work. Good government all the time. We are